In this session, we're going to be looking at the subject of in the beginning. That is, we're going to be looking at the first three chapters of Genesis over this next hour. So if you'll take your Bible and turn to Genesis chapter 1, verses 1, this is where we're going to begin. Now, Genesis chapters 1 through 3 set forth the foundational truths upon which the rest of the Bible is built. It also sets the stage for the central theme of the entire Bible, God's plan of salvation. Now, to understand properly these first three chapters of Genesis, we need to understand the historical context in which they're given. First of all, this knowledge was first given or written down by Moses, and they are recorded as part of the first book of Moses, and there are many, many other accounts throughout the Bible which also speak of creation. So we shouldn't look at Genesis 1 through 3 as being a complete account. It's simply one presentation of it. And if we read other accounts in the Bible, it may give us further information or may look at it from different points of view. I've written here in your syllabus many, many other verses which relate to the creation of the heavens and the earth that occurred in the beginning. Now, the most important thing to understand about the book of Genesis and about the Bible as a whole is that God Himself is the central character or the main character of the entire Bible. The Bible is about what God is doing on behalf of His creation, including mankind, all to His glory and praise. The God of the Bible is assumed from the beginning to be in existence before the creation of the heavens and the earth, nor does the Bible take any time to explain what He was doing or what was going on. In addition, it's assumed that a spiritual realm already exists before the physical creation of the heavens and the earth, which we think of today as our universe. Throughout the Bible, again, we see many different ways in which this creation of the heavens and the earth is presented. But always, the heavens and the earth, the entire created order which God brought into existence, which He spoke into existence, as presented in Genesis chapters 1 through chapters 3, this entire created order brings glory to God. It shows that there is, in fact, a God who is divine, who is eternal in nature, and who is far beyond our understanding as human beings who are creatures of that Creator God. So, let's look at Genesis chapter 1, 1 through 3. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's the first verse of the entire Bible. Once again, the existence of God is assumed from the very outset. And this is the underlying assumption that goes throughout the entire Bible. God exists. God is alive. And God is a powerful God, a loving God, and an all-wise God. He is sovereign over all, and He is bringing to pass His purposes according to His own will. Now, in contrast to this, in the time in which Israel was living, especially during the period of time that they were in Egypt, and then after they were brought out by Moses into the wilderness before going into the promised land, they were surrounded by many nations which were polytheistic nations, that is, nations which believed in many, many gods. And these polytheistic nations all had their own creation myth stories. And all of these without exception are simply bizarre. And you can read accounts of them, you can go to a good library and get accounts of them. Some of them, for instance, relate to the fact, for instance, the gods fought with each other. One of them won, one of them died. The one that died, body was split in half. Half of it became heaven and half of it became earth. Those are the types of creation stories which the polytheistic nations that surrounded Israel had. In addition, these nations worship many gods or many things which represented those gods. And we're going to see as we go through chapter 1 through 3 of Genesis that this whole idea that there is one God, one supreme God who acts according to His own will and His own purposes is greatly in contrast with the gods of antiquity. So, Genesis chapter 1 verse 1 again. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. The picture that's given here is the Spirit of God hovering and waiting like a bird would hover over its eggs, which were getting ready to hatch. So here we have God and His Spirit hovering over this formless and empty creation. And the next verses, or the next chapter of Genesis, chapter 1 of Genesis, will show God bringing order into that creation. And all throughout, we will be seeing that all of God's created order has a proper relationship with God as the Creator, and that there is meaning and purpose in all that God created. Once again, this is in great contrast to the polytheistic notions of the ancient world, as well as, obviously, with the atheistic notions of many people in the present day world. Verse 3, and God said. Throughout Genesis chapter 1, we will see that God speaks, and when He speaks, His word brings into being, or brings into fruition, or into creation, His created order. Genesis chapter 1, verse 3 again, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. There was evening and there was morning the first day. This account in Genesis is presented as God creating the world in 6 days and then resting on the seventh. This then becomes the basis for the Hebrew way of regarding a week, in which, as we read in one of the commandments, the Hebrews under the Mosaic law were not supposed to work on the Sabbath day, the seventh day. Though they were supposed to work on the first 6 days. They were not to work on the Sabbath day because God Himself in His creation had rested on the seventh day. So this becomes a pattern for the nation of Israel. But this also shows the order in which God set forth His creation. The first few parts here show God forming His creation, and then the last few parts of it show His filling of His creation. And there is, in the Hebrew text, there is a parallelism here, sort of a literary device which really magnifies this and the beauty in which God does all of this. Verse 6, and God said, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water. In other words, there was to be space between water, which was on the earth, and water, which was above the heavens. And this was ancient man's view of the world. And this is presented from the point of view of man in a way in which mankind can understand it. It's not meant to be a scientific presentation. It's meant to set forth God's created order in a way that shows God's meaning and purpose in all that He did, and in a way in which it magnifies God. So, let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky, or you could also translate that as heaven. And there was evening and there was morning the second day. Verse 9, and God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place. And let dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters He called seas. And God saw that it was good. Throughout this creation account here, we read from time to time that when God saw His created order, which He had spoken into being, He saw that it was good. And finally, we'll see when it's all over, when he's put His whole creation into order, He looks at it all and He says that it was very good. God's creation of the heavens and the earth in its original form was good. And we should always understand that when we look at the natural world around us. God's intent of the natural order and all that's within it was good from the very beginning, and He created it in a way in which it was good. We will later see that this good creation and all of its beauty and order and proper relationship with God is marred by the fall of man when sin comes into the world. So that today, when we look at the created order, we still see God's beauty. It still magnifies God's presence. But we also sense that there's something wrong. There's something that's amiss in the world today. And that's perfectly in accord with the presentation that the Bible gives of the heavens and the earth. Verse 11, then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees in the land that bear fruit with seed in it according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds, and God saw that it was good. So here God calls into existence vegetation, that is plant life, fruit trees, vegetables, these things like that. And each of these has seed within itself so that these plants are able to reproduce. And then they continue to do that generation after generation, all the way down through the centuries and down through the years. And each of these plant lives, just as later animal life, were said to be according to their kind. That is, God created certain life forms, both for plant life as well as for animal life. And He created it in such a way that these life forms or these kinds would then reproduce themselves down through the years, down through the centuries, down through the ages. And when we look at the world in which we live in today, it's not hard to tell a dog from a person. It's not hard to tell a whale from a fly. God had His creation set up in a way which made sense, in a way which was logical and beautiful, in which brought order and a proper relationship with all creatures, both plant life and animal life, in relationship with God's greatest creature of all, man, and in relationship with God, the Creator Himself. Verse 13, and there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. Notice that the universe is created in relationship to the earth, because earth will be the home for man. Man, who is created in God's image, to be God's overseer over all of His creation on earth. Now, whatever the physical center of the universe is, I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows or ever will know. It's irrelevant. From a spiritual perspective, it is the earth that is the center of the universe, because this is where God's great plan is taking place, and everything else is created in relationship to what's taking place on earth. Notice that God created the stars, the sun, and the moon, and that these had a specific purpose for them. They are to give light upon the earth. They are to separate the days and the years and the seasons. They're to separate night from day. These bodies, which were in the what we today would call outer space, in ancient times were revered as gods and feared as gods, or else the representation of gods. Not in the Bible. In the Bible, the sun, the moon, the stars were all created by God and have their specific purpose in relationship to the universe and in relationship to how that affects what's going on in the earth. Very, very important and very, very different from the pagan nations which surrounded Israel. So, God saw that all this was good, and there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. Then, verse 20, and God said, let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea, and every living and moving thing with which the water teems, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Once again, the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, all created according to their kinds, and then were able to reproduce from that point on. God, verse 22, blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water and the seas, and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. Then, verse 24, and God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds, and God saw that it was good. So up through here we have the creation of the heavens and the earth, and then the filling of them with plant life, with fish in the seas, with animal life upon the earth. And all of these were created according to their kind so that they could reproduce themselves down through the generations. And they were to fill the earth. All of these were creatures or things that were created by God, not things which were God in and of themselves, but simply creatures of God. And in their proper relationship with God would be something which showed the greatness and the glory of God in all that He had created. But finally, God comes to the climax of His creative activity, and that is the creation of man, whom God assigns to be His overseer or His ruler on the earth in His stead. Verse 26, then God said, let us, and this let us here is a Hebrew way of speaking, and it refers to the fact of God speaking to His heavenly council, that is, for instance, to His angels. And it's always used in the few places that it's used when there's a very significant event or statement of God which is about to take place. So He says, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So, God said, let us make man in our image and in our likeness. The difference that separates man from all other creatures on the earth is the fact that God made man in His image. And when the word man here is used, once again, it's in its generic form. It means mankind, both male and female, as we'll see in the next verses. God made man to be His caretaker upon the earth, to take care of His entire creation, and to do this in a way that was in fellowship with Him, in a way that would be a blessing to man, to all of God's creation, and in a way in which God could be glorified through His entire creation. Verse 27. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. Once again, God created mankind, both man and woman, in the image of God to reflect His glory and His likeness in all that mankind did upon the earth. This is a very, very significant verse here, this idea of being created in the image of God. In the ancient times, the kings of, nations surrounding Israel, including even the kings or the prophets or the judges of Israel at times, could be called gods with a small g, or sons of God, and simply an indication of their special relationship with God, that they were God's climax of creation and that they were supposed to rule and judge in a godly way upon the earth. And this is what mankind was created to do, both male and female. So this is very, very important. All of the morality of the Bible derives its beginning or its foundation or its meaning from the fact that man was created in God's image. And throughout the Bible, God is expecting man to live in a way in which, since he's created in God's image, he is supposed to live in a godlike way. That is, in a way of righteousness, love, and justice in his relationships with his fellow man. Very similar to the idea of loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. So, biblical morality, the ethics of the Old Testament and the New Testament, finds its basis in this idea of being created in the image of God. And when Christ eventually comes, is sent by God, He is specifically said to be the image of the invisible God. And the great goal of Christianity in a practical sense is for man believers in Jesus Christ to become more and more like Christ, and therefore to become more and more like God Himself. This idea of the image of God is very, very important throughout the entire Bible. And to understand the Bible properly and to understand life today properly, man must be understood that he was created in the image of God to carry out God's will upon the earth. Verse 28. God blessed them, therefore, man and woman, who had been created in His image. He blessed them and He said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food, and to all the beasts of the earth, and all the birds of the air, and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. So God provided for man to have food, and He provided for all His other creatures to have food as well. Here, man was basically vegetarian in nature and in his original state. Later, a few chapters later, we will see that this changed. And that's also changed today. The most important thing to understand here is that God Himself provided for man so that man had all that he needed so that man could carry out God's will upon the earth. Verse 31. God saw all that He had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. God saw all that He had made, and it was very good. Ladies and gentlemen, the creation of the heavens and the earth, which God created, as recorded here in Genesis chapter 1, was very good. And even today, when we look at that creation, when we look at the trees, the plants, animal life, people, we can see the great created order which He had put in place. You can look at it and you can tell this is not an accident. This has design to it. This has meaning to it. This has purpose to it. But that purpose can only be properly understood in relationship to the Creator God. Therefore, when we look at God's creation, we shouldn't think of the creation itself as God. Instead, we should recognize that this is God's creation, and its proper relationship is to be viewed as something which God has created for special purpose and having special meaning as to how it provides for God's entire created order here upon the earth. God said, once again, that His entire created order was very good. Chapter 2, verse 1. Thus, the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work He had been doing. So, on the seventh day, He rested from all His work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, He rested from all the work of creating that He had done. Beautiful summary here of all that had occurred, and then on the seventh day, after these 6 days of creative activity, that God rested from all His work because it had been completed. Now, when we look at Genesis chapters 1 through 3, chapters 1-1 through 2-3 form a natural section here. And this is the section in which this presentation of the creation of the heavens and the earth in 6 days and then God resting on the seventh is set forth. Throughout, we have both literal language and we have pictorial language. The entire creation account is put in pictorial language in a way in which people can understand it, in a way that it makes sense to them and gives meaning to their lives. That's not to say that's all the details of creation. We're going to see more details in chapter 2. And then, if you'll look up these examples I've given you in the syllabus, you'll also see many, many other details there as well. Nevertheless, the most important thing to remember from Genesis chapters 1-1 through chapter 2, verse 3, is that God has spoken, and according to His purpose and will, He has brought into existence a created order in which everything has a proper relationship to its Creator, with man himself being created in God's image to be the ruler and overseer of that created order.